A master in the art of living draws no sharp distinction between her work and her play, her labor and her leisure, her mind and her body, her education and her recreation. She hardly knows which is which. She simply pursues her vision of excellence through whatever she is doing, and leaves others to determine if she is working or playing. To herself, she always appears to be doing both. François-René de Chateaubriand. Welcome to the Lost Traveler podcast. I'm your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I have a very special guest co-host joining me. His name is Feng Shua, and he lives in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And he is a best-selling author and a business and real estate coach. He's a public speaker. He has a wonderful podcast himself, the Peak Potential Success Show. I had the privilege of being a guest on that show recently. And welcome, Feng. Happy to have you.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me. Always a joy talking to you. I mean, my experience with you is that there's never a dull moment. So thank you very much.
Never a dull moment, and that's as it should be. We're in a pretty crazy time in our world history, and you and I are both part of a wonderful group called Three Hearts Global that brings people together with complete heartfelt energy and lifting each other up and allowing, creating space to hear one another and to feel heard as well. And one of the things that I've gotten to know about you in the little bit that we've shared together is that you really are a person who comes from the heart. You have a focus on helping people, being a helper in this crazy time, helping uplift people to be their best, the best that they can be. Where did that start in you? Where from childhood? Where did that impulse begin?
Oh, wow.
Go away.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for saying that. It makes me feel very, very good. I'm humbled and much appreciated. Where did that start? I don't think I can really pinpoint an exact moment as to where that really started. But it's something that I think I've always done. I think the very first thing I could think of is when we're in a group of, where we're in a family and all the cousins are together. I usually am the person to go, hey, let's go get ice cream, and I'll go buy ice cream for everybody. I love helping people. Fast forward to my career working as an engineer before. I mean, like, I love helping people get to where they want to be successful in their where they are, achieve the goals and the, what do you call it, the requirements within that role, but then also exceed past those roles that they were in. And then when it comes to the entrepreneurship and all that kind of stuff, that really comes from really helping people find homes, helping people invest in real estate. And when they are able to succeed, it makes me feel good. It makes me feel good when they come back and go, wow, I never thought I could do that. I've been known to make a lot of people cry. And I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, when I opened up my very first shipment of my personal book, I had tears in my eyes. I'm like, okay, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so, exactly. There is good crying.
I mean, that's a good cry. So really having people come back and say, wow, thank you very much. I never dreamed that I could be an author, never dreamed that I can invest in real estate, never dreamed of speaking in front of a whole bunch of people. That really makes me feel like, wow, I can make a difference. I can help people and help them reach their potential and even exceed it.
My grandmother used to say, potential only means something if you're doing something with it. Did your parents impart some of this in you? You say you have many cousins, you have a large family and siblings and all that?
Well, my parents are the ones that, well, within my extended family, my mom, her sister, and her brother are usually the homes that people gravitate to. And if there's an event, it's either one of their homes. And that kind of had a trickling effect to myself, my cousin, who also hosts a lot of her events at her place now. Yeah. And it's something that we value togetherness, we value family, we value adding value to other people. If other people don't do certain things, we step up. If we wanted to bring people together, we're the ones that step up to put people together. So I think that kind of stems where that mentality comes from. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when there's a speaking event and somebody needs to pull people together, okay, I'll jump in and take charge. Right. If somebody is in need of some help, well, hey, reach out to me. I can help you out. If I can't, I know somebody who can. I will always direct you to somebody else if need be.
Is most of your family in Canada nearby, or are they spread out?
They're well, the main group is within Alberta, Edmonton and Calgary. And then we have some in overseas.
Very cool. Yeah, my family is spread out. It seems the farther apart we are, the closer we are, in a way.
It helps now with Zoom and all that kind of stuff too. So
yes, absolutely. Although, you know, when it comes to family traditions and reunions and things like that, and the traditional foods and celebrations, there's something about being together in the same room that Zoom can't achieve yet.
I remember recently during like the whole COVID and all kind of stuff, everything shuts down, and we'll have a Christmas dinner. And we're basically panning our laptop over what we're eating. And then, so what are you having? It's like, that looks good.
Yeah, it'd be better to taste it. This is where I live in Spain. It's a very tiny village. And I was mentioning to you before about this annual celebration that they have, where they are really striving to preserve and protect the traditions and the skills from weaving cloth from linen that they've raised themselves, going through that whole process, the sewing, the fig harvesting, the alcohol stills, you know, there's a kind of brandy that they make locally here from grapes and other fruits. And are there any of those skills? You know, this whole podcast, The Lost Traveler Podcast, is about bringing together people who excel in certain life skills. Mm-hmm. It's a conversation I think that's lacking globally. What are life skills? What are the skills that universally every human being learns? The question is, where do you learn them and from whom and how well do you learn them, right? You obviously, like you were alluding to, you have particular skills that you can offer to the people in your circles, your family, your friends, and the broader circles around you in the world. Who taught you those skills? Where did you learn? And where do you feel those are in your, you know, obviously nobody's an expert in all of them. Right. When we're talking about communication skills, we're talking about financial literacy, we're talking about emotional literacy, sexual literacy, grieving, nutrition, hygiene, all of those things. We all learn the same things, don't we?
Yeah. Well, for me, I've been told that I've excelled in thinking fast and also reacting fast to certain things. But also, that also really comes from putting yourself into uncomfortable situations often enough so that you're able to react fast. You're able to train your mind and your body to do certain things when you don't have time to think about it. Sure, it's great to prepare. Sure, it's great to have all that plan A, plan B all sorted out. But when those don't actually come to fruition, then you have to go on instinct, have to go on reaction kind of thing. So that's something I've been told I've been very good at. And I think I attribute that to when I was young, my family loves playing with riddles. I remember from a very, very young age in elementary school, we would always come up with these riddles where, okay, you give a statement, what's the answer? You give an equation, what's the answer? And to this day, I love passing those questions out to people just so that we can have some fun. And now with escape rooms, I'm like, oh, I know that one. Oh, I've seen that one before, because I've actually been playing with those kind of questions from a very, very early age. And then in order to maintain that, as you said, with the festival and event that you were just at, you want to keep that tradition. And in order to keep that tradition alive, you do it on an annual basis, or else it starts to kind of whittle away. Same with whatever skill sets you and I may or may not have, is that if you feel that you have a certain skill set, you have to keep that going or else you'll lose it. One of my clients is losing their confidence. They're like, hey, I'm not feeling confident anymore. And I go, well, when was the last time you felt confident? And he goes, oh, when I was doing this, when I was doing that. I'm like, yeah, when you were on stages, when you were in front of people, when you were speaking on a consistent basis, when was the last time you did a presentation? He goes, oh yeah, months. I'm like, that's why. So for myself, in order to keep myself in those places that make me uncomfortable, doing on spur of the moment talks, doing presentations that I may or may not have time to prepare 100% for, but putting myself in those situations where I need to be able to present myself, be professional, and still deliver a good product, add value to other people. So that's that, when you're saying, talking about skill set, that will be one of the skill sets I think I'm very good at, being able to react fast on my feet and coming up with solutions and ideas when it might be drained of ideas because everybody's already gone through the rounds kind of thing.
Do you feel like fearlessness plays a part in that? Are you fearless? Do you feel like you're fearless?
I wouldn't say I'm fearless. There's a lot of things that do scare me, but I feel that I have a very, very, what do you call it? This mindset where I go, well, it can't be that bad, right? The worst thing that can happen is you bomb. Okay, then you bomb, right? You learn from it and carry on. I can tell you this. One of the things that if you're afraid of something and you're very, very afraid of that happening, there's a good chance that it's going to happen. I sing on stages. I performed on stages before back in the day. And the one thing I was afraid of the most, and I'm sure a lot of performers out there would have the same thought, is that they forget the lyrics.
Yes.
Right? You have the music playing in the background and all you do is stand there going, So that's exactly what happened. I was so focused on remembering lyrics. I was reciting over and over and over again, right up to the very moment until they were going to announce me on stage. And sure enough, that last time I rehearsed it, I flubbed. And yep. It was the exact same moment that I flubbed there that I flubbed in front of everybody else. Wow. I literally went, I'm sorry. And then continued on with the song, right? But In retrospect, hey, I got a great photo of me standing on stage singing, not at that moment, but of the other moments that I was up there. And I use that photo a lot and nobody really remembers about it, only me. That stuff that people think about, they're what they're fearing about, it's all in the mind. Once you kind of look at it and attack it, then overcome it, then it's just something that you can kind of put a badge on and give yourself a pat on the back and go, hey, I did it. And you have a good story to tell.
And you survived it, even if you flubbed something, if you didn't. I'm a singer as well. And also, you know, have a big background in live theater performance. And I've been on stage where I've dropped a line or I've missed my entrance even. I was doing a production one time and I was sitting in the dressing room just hanging out and talking, you know, and you can hear the play on the loudspeaker going on. And so you have a sense of when you're supposed to enter. And I was just in another world and I missed my entrance and I left the actors on stage for just a few minutes. It seemed like an eternity for them, I'm sure, but it felt to me like, and likewise with my musicians, when I had a band and I was singing mostly jazz, you know, it's such a collaborative experience when you're working with other artists on the stage that one feels like you're letting them down as much as you're letting your audience down or yourself. I miss it. I miss live performance, but I feel like my role now in my 50s is to help guide people through their fears. Mm-hmm. you know, the word failure comes up a lot, and a lot of people, just like fear, right? Mm-hmm. Fear and failure. And a lot of people are challenged by it. A lot of people are stagnated by it in their ability to move forward in their lives. What do you have to say to people who may be stuck in fear? We're in a very fearful time. There are people all over the world who are in great fear right now, mm-hmm. living in that fear. And also people who are fearful of failure.
Well, with that, I would say that it depends on what these fears and what these failures may or may not be. I cannot speak to like big tragedy stuff that you're afraid of. That's not really my area of expertise, and everybody's viewpoint or feelings towards those may or may not be different. But when it comes to fear, it's really the fear of the unknown. And therefore, if you could find somebody who's overcome that kind of stuff, ask them for what their experience was like, ask them for what to expect. And don't just ask one person, ask 3, 4, 5 different people to get different kind of stories as to what they feel like. Because one person's thoughts may not be what yours is. And when you hit the same thing, and I was like, wait a minute, this is completely different than what you told me. Well, that's because everybody's perspectives are a little bit different. But with regards to the fear stuff, it's really the fear of unknown. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what to expect. It's just like learning how to drive. Like, I'd be freaked out of my mind if you threw me in front of a wheel and go, hey, drive this, and you don't have any experience whatsoever. So you go through the lessons, you get the training, you talk to people. Okay, what do I do here? What should I expect there? And when you get all that stuff sorted out, then you go, okay, I have a sense as to what I'm going to be expecting. Then the other stuff is, can I experience it for myself? Kind of thing. When it's the fear of failure, well, if you look at the failure as, don't let that repeat. Learn from it, progress from it, and then also use it to guide somebody else who would like to do the same thing. So if you had one story about failure, pass that story on to somebody else so that they don't have to go through the same thing. And maybe they experience something different, now share stories. So that's you right. can learn from each other. So with regards to failure and fear, I think those two things is something that we can always learn from each other on, and also share those stories, share those experiences so that we can mitigate and avoid those as much as possible. We can't be perfect on all of them, but we can try and guide people along and also guide ourselves so that we could be less fearful of stuff, be more realistic as to what will happen. What's the worst case, best case, most common case that will happen? And that's how you assess your feelings and your expectations. But when you're talking about fear of failure, there's also the fear of success.
A lot of people have fear of success. How do you meet that with people that you serve and people that you work with?
Well, a personal story for me is my first real estate deal. It was the first time we put out an offer, and we were freaked out of our minds. We knew the numbers. We know if we get this offer accepted, we will make money on this property, right? In retrospect, it's a pretty low offer, and therefore we're like, hey, it's gonna be great in today's standpoint. But at that time, we sent it in, and I couldn't sleep for 2 days because we didn't hear back. And my biggest fear was, what if they do accept the offer? What do I do then? Who do I call? Do I have to do this? What do I have to do that? What do I do? And the moment they go, they didn't even give us a counter offer. It's like, no. I'm like, that felt so good. Now off to the next one. So it's that fear of success where people don't know what they need to do if they hit a certain point. And that's why having people like you guide them, having coaches, mentors, show them the way so that they're not afraid of failure and not afraid of the success.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I think that those of us that are committed to living a life that allows us to help remove the stones out of the path of others, especially young people, coming up in this crazy time. I mean, there's never been a time on Earth that hasn't been fearsome or kind of nuts, right? There's always been something that's going on that is unconscionable for that generation. Every generation has experienced it, and we are in our time to navigate this world. And I don't think any of us that are out here helping remove those stones are saying that we have all the answers. Like you say, everyone has a different and very unique perspective. You can talk to three or four mothers about the process of childbirth, and they're all going to tell you a different story. There are going to be common threads through the experience. Same with child loss, right? There are going to be common threads through those experiences. But I think you're absolutely right to use as a measuring stick the worst thing that's ever happened to you. I always go back to that. When I meet a challenging situation, I always go back to, for instance, the loss of my son, which is the worst thing I can conceive happening to me. And I measure everything else against that. Then those other challenges don't seem so daunting. And in fact, they transform into a positive. They transform into opportunity, right? With every challenge comes opportunity.
Yeah.
Shadow and Light, LLC, was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups, virtual or in-person book club meetings. For further information, go to psychologyprofessorandminister.com. But I think the mindset that we approach those challenges with is what really, really matters. Mm-hmm. The mindset and the openness to transform, and the magic of transforming a challenge into an opportunity.
Yeah. And what you just said really rings true about the most difficult thing that you've gone through is the most difficult thing that you've gone through from your perspective.
Right.
And therefore, if anything else comes in, you kind of prepare, you're prepared to face those things because you're comparing it to that. Some people who don't face challenges, who don't put themselves into uncomfortable areas, who don't face their fears, their most difficult aspect or experience in their life might be, oh, I stubbed my toe.
Right.
And if that's the only thing that they can relate on, then everything else is disastrous. I listened to a few podcasts, and this one host says they work out to the point where they're exhausted. They work out for hours until they're in pain and they can't breathe anymore because they're working out so hard. No, that has two parts to it. One, it keeps them healthy and active. But the other thing is everything else they do compared to how hard they worked out is nothing. So now they're able to face other challenges because they're comparing it to how hard they train and how hard they work out. And within that workout, it's controlled. They have control as to how hard they go, how long they go. So as long as you challenge yourself with a controlled mechanism so that you don't go overboard and hurt yourself and whatnot, right, then you're able to expand what you are able to face when you're not prepared for it.
Right.
Right. So it's one of those things that you need to expand that expectation as to what you can face and what challenges you can overcome.
And that plays right into the whole conversation about skill building. Mm-hmm. When you are elevating your skill level, right? Say you want to learn a foreign language or a cuisine or a sport or how to be a real estate mogul, right? You go and you find someone who's mastered to the degree that they have, mastered those things, and you learn from that person, right? Yeah. If we are learning through those experiences that we would categorize as failure. I don't like the word failure. I don't believe in it.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist for me. My mindset is, if you have taken a challenge and if you've taken, you know, a song that you've flubbed the lyric on and you've learned from it, you learn a new skill or you learn a new technique for memorization or to, you know, calm yourself and get out of your head and just be in the moment with the art form, right? That is life. Then if you've learned something, then it can't be a failure. Mm-hmm. I think there's too much conversation about failure in America or in the American schooling system that I was raised in. Even though I lived all over the world, we still went to the, you know, back to the American form of education and evaluation. And if you got an F on your report card, you were punished. I was punished. You know, it was, you were seen as less than, you were compared to the other students in your abilities. And at that time, there was no talk about learning disabilities. There was no talk about, you know, other challenges, social dynamics and anxieties and things like that around testing and so forth. Somebody could be an absolute brilliant mathematician, but really suck at tests, right? And the pressure of that. And so I think we're a lot more sensitive to that now. What is your experience around recognizing the journey of the individual and validating that everyone is a unique learner and we all have our own measure of success? And hopefully we don't recognize it as failure if we've learned, but...
I think to your point about the educational system, it's unfortunate that there's that pass fail kind of mentality, and then people are looked down upon when they don't pass or they do have a poor grade. What I think needs to kind of be implemented is, okay, what can we do or find out why? And also explain to the students as to why we're doing it this way. Mm-hmm. Because a little bit of a different thought process than what you think is that from me, I think it's somewhat important to be able to have a grading system so that you're not always just being passed on to the next level, because that's also not advantageous for their real life career or for them facing the real world, because they've been passed on and they think that, oh, this kind of effort is good enough. But once you're thrown out there, all of a sudden that effort's no longer good enough. So there needs to be a good balance as to, okay, we need to still challenge the students. However, we can't degrade them because they do bad. We need to find out a way to elevate them so that they can have put in the effort to do to reach their full potential and not just go, oh, I'm going to laze my way through school and expect that I'm going to get everything handed to me.
But the grading system is not a perfect system either. Right. I mean, you're at the mercy of the educator to give you that grade based on their perception and their perspective of how well you're doing and how you are measured against the other students.
Right.
When, here's a great story. There was a little girl who was in school and she was always finding herself in detention because she couldn't sit still. She was always moving around. She was, you know, distracting the other kids and she always ended up in detention. And finally, the teacher called in her parents to a meeting and they said, we can't work with your child. She is just too much. She can't be controlled, right? And we want to put her on this medication, that medication. This is a huge problem right now. And making all these suggestions. And they went away, the parents feeling defeated, feeling like they had failed as parents because they couldn't control their daughter, right? Or give her the structure to be able to control herself. And it kept happening. And there was a new principal of the school or headmaster came in and was observing the children and called the parents in for another meeting. And they were saying, oh, here we go again, right? And the principal took them to the classroom where their daughter was in detention and had them look through the window of the door at what was going on. And their daughter was up on the desk, I mean, just like climbing the walls and moving around, just, you know, just kind of acting nuts. And they said, I know we struggle with this all the time and we just can't control her movement. She's just a kinetic person. Mm-hmm. And the principal said, that's right. She's a dancer. She's showing all the signs of being a creative artist. Mm-hmm. And she belongs in a school that's going to support that process. And they sent her to a school for the arts. And cool. She excelled in everything. And she became a world-renowned choreographer. Right? So yes. Here we have, through our educational system, which was designed around the time of the Industrial Revolution to get children out of nature, mm-hmm. off of farms, and into factories.
Yeah.
It was designed to dehumanize them, which I think mission accomplished. I think a lot of educational systems dehumanize kids from their foundation years forward. Mm-hmm. We force them to read way too young. We force them to achieve and to compare themselves to others. And that if you don't meet the top tier of other students in your classroom, you are a failure. You are less than. What kind of message is, and we force these most kids who are very physically active and kinetic, we force them to sit in these hard chairs for hours and hours and hours, less and less outdoor time, mm-hmm. right? Recess and so forth, running around outside, breathing fresh air. What are we doing?
Yeah.
The school that I had my son in was a Waldorf school, and they didn't use a grading system at all. Mm-hmm. They evaluated each child individually through like writing, the teacher would actually write observational paragraphs about that child and their unique style of learning and the process that they went through to get to the next level of development, the challenges that they met or the challenges that they solved and resolved. And I thought that was a much better, much more personal way. Class sizes are way too big now too, right?
Well, yeah, like I totally agree. Like there needs to be a system in place that lets people discover themselves as well. But also people need to be challenged still. Like even in the arts, they need to be challenged to reach their potential. They, even in anything that they do, they need to be challenged. And that can't be missing in training or education.
That's
people
right.
still need to be challenged, because once you take that out, then they get complacent. And that's basically where I was trying to go at. If we don't have some sort of system in place that still challenges them, then when they go out there, they're thinking, oh, everything's easy kind of thing. So there just needs to be a balance. And I totally agree with what you were saying. Not everybody learns the same way. And back to what your original question was, I love being able to like talk to people and understand what their mindsets are so that I could place them in the right spots for them to excel. And once they excel to a certain extent, I go, okay, they're ready for the next stage. They're ready for the next stage. And even if they personally don't feel that they're ready, I might sneak it in there just to see, okay, look, you can do it kind of thing. So I love being able to do that, to recognize certain people's skill sets, put them in the right spots, but also add a little bit of challenges to that so that they can expand on their horizons and realize they could do more than what they thought they could.
And that's testing. And I think that there's nothing wrong with testing. The question is, who's developing the test, mm-hmm. and what is their measuring tool for achievement? You know, when we talk about kids graduating from school, there are kids all over the world who are graduating from school without the ability to read. Even and there goes the grading system, because if they're being allowed to pass and graduate with their classmates when they are not at a skill level that allows them to step out confidently and powerfully into the world and into a world that is really challenging right now in terms of employment opportunities. I'm a big proponent, like yourself, of entrepreneurial ventures, because it really does have to now come out of the individual. You know, the corporate world is starting to shake a little bit, the foundations of corporate, you know, business are starting to shake a little bit. They weren't built for earthquakes like COVID and environmental changes that we're experiencing right now. The challenges are Herculean. They're magnified more than we've ever experienced in our lifetime.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé blasé means to tell your story.
Where do you see us going in terms of the future, in terms of navigating not only this difficult time, but coming out the other end when we're talking about climate change and we're talking about business models and how we deal with one another as human beings, as individuals? It's a big question.
Oh, wow. That's a big loaded question. And you're asking me to look into my crystal ball, which normally isn't that...
Let me rephrase it. What would you like to see? What's your fairy tale ending? What is your resolution for yourself, for your kids?
I believe that based on what's been going on the last couple of years with COVID and everything shutting down, I think that there's no way around the fact that we need to kind of appreciate technology a little bit more. It's going to be here to stay. Lots of people are now don't want to go back to offices because, well, why do we? Because we've proven that we could do our jobs at home. There's no reason why we need to drive all the way out to an office, sit there for 8 hours and drive all the way back. In the same mindset, the employers are starting to think of, why do we have to have all this real estate if people don't want to come into their office? So they have to kind of think of a model that works for both. Okay, is there a hybrid model where they can work at home and also come into the office? Because working fully at home may or may not be the best solution either. You lose that one-on-one contact, that face-to-face, face-to-face relationship with the client or with your coworkers. And that social aspect is very important too. I mean, some people forgot how to wear pants because they're on Zoom all the time. So that's something that companies have to start adapting to. And this has tested a lot of companies as to, okay, are they open-minded? Are they willing to adapt to the times and accept technology and allow them to grow in a technological world so that they can do this hybrid thing? Now, because of that, all this lack of communication face-to-face is starting to get people more and more willing to judge or say comments and all kind of stuff, not in the career environment, but on social media. Right. As we're experiencing all the time now, cancel culture and all this kind of stuff. It's because we have this layer of protections, so to say, that we don't actually have to face that person face to face and tell them what we think or the first thing that comes to mind. And then you just type it. And people are starting to do all that kind of stuff, whether it's insulting or rude or whatnot. And they don't think about the consequences of what that might do because of technology once again. So there needs to be that balance. And therefore, when we're moving on, ideally, I would like people to be able to really have that face-to-face engagement, but still have the option of embracing technology. But if you're not willing to say something to that person's face-to-face, then why are you doing it online?
Oh, exactly. I would never post anything on social media that I wouldn't want on the front page of the New York Times. Mm-hmm. I always think about that first. But I think that goes back. I mean, this is kind of an out there picture, but we are not that different than we were in prehistoric times. We have not, even with the advances in technology and in healthcare and all these other things, we're not that different in our physiology. We're not that different in our mindset. We're still worried about the tribe over on the other side of the hill that's a few miles away that we can't see, right? There's this trust thing and this tribalism that we gather in groups and we stay divided from one another. And technology is really interesting. I was having this conversation over coffee this morning with a friend. Technology is like a very shiny object to someone who's never seen one. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of this life skill building process is it changes with the generations. I'm finding skills now in my mid 50s that I never conceived I would need in my 20s and 30s, right? Or even my 40s. Talk about a crystal ball. Nobody can predict what you're gonna need, right? So we are always having to adapt to the time that we're in, the tools that we have at our fingertips. I know a lot of people my age and older who were not raised with the internet, who were not raised with the technology that is coming fast. And they are petrified of it to the point where they can't absorb, even as intuitive as technology has become, they're very much blocked and afraid of it. Get back to fear. I think, you know, technological savvy is important, but, and this is a big but, or maybe it's an and at the same time, we have to be mindful that technology is changing at breakneck speed. The way that we interact through technology and the tools that we have today versus 20 years ago. If I was learning a skill in technology 20 years ago,
you'd be obsolete.
You'd be obsolete, right? And I have an expectation, given that change that, you know, that we've seen in very short order. Sometimes it's a year or two, right? There's a new iPhone out every year now, right? So what does that mean in terms of, to you, in terms of embracing technology and embracing the adaptability that we have to maintain in learning, perpetually learning these new skills to meet the technology of our day?
Mm-hmm. Well, for myself, if you want to learn everything about technology, you don't have enough time in the day to do so. I would say surround yourself with the people who can guide you along with the stuff that is absolutely necessary, like the fundamentals. Is it necessary for your life? Is like for your day-to-day life, what do you call it, skills and life roles? If you don't need certain types of things in your life, then you don't need to learn that type of technology. It's not worth your time to do so. But to have a basic understanding of what's going on, knowing that that is possible, and where to go to find those skill sets, I think that's very important. But don't just, you know, clamor yourself into a hole and go, yeah, that's not happening. Nope, I'm going to stick with this because this is the only way I'm going to do it. And nobody can tell me otherwise. Well, that's not going to allow you to grow. And that's eventually going to make you obsolete because you're not open to other solutions. Being open-minded is very, very important in this day and age. And technology is the biggest reason why we need to be open-minded. And having those people around you is very, very important.
What about data collection and security? The feeling that every time you turn on your iPhone or your mobile phone, or every time you turn on your computer, someone is tracking every click, every movement, and nothing is private anymore, right? Unless you have a VPN. But even that, how do you trust that it is what it says it is? How do you trust that you're protected? Because I think that adds to the anxiety and the fear of our time. Mm-hmm. especially in older generations.
Yeah, well, it also comes down to what's the worst can happen, what's the least that can happen, what's most likely to happen. I think a lot of people so quickly jump to the worst case scenario and believe that that would happen for sure. It's like security systems in your house. I know a lot of people has a security system in their house because that's what security system vendors tell you that, hey, yes, you need to have this in your house.
You need
but
one.
Then, yeah, you have to have one, think about your family, think about all this kind of stuff. And then what was funny was one of these security system vendors who came up to us says that, but this is worth all your money. And that's the sticker that you put on your door. And most likely, if you just have that sticker and not even have a security system, it would cause most people to avoid your house already.
That's right. Just buy the sticker.
Exactly. So, which is funny because I know a few people who just do that. You know what? I'll just put the sticker on. That's right. Well, actually, a funny story about that is I know somebody who has a sticker, which that company is obsolete already. Yeah. And they put it onto their building and that's their security system. What's funny about it is I looked across the street and somebody else had the same sticker. I'm like, I know that's obsolete.
That's right.
But anyway, like, what are the chances of that actually happening? Yes, worst case scenario, you get broken into, but what are chances of that? And we need to assess that risk. Yes, it's important to understand the securities on your phone. Yes, it's important to be protected against all that technological, what people are able to do with technology on your security, on your data and all that kind of stuff and your identity. But what are the chances of that actually happening? And it comes back down to getting those experts to talk to them who aren't trying to really sell you something and understanding what is the actual risk. If to you that risk is high, then do something about it. Put in those securities, put in those measures so that you are protected against all that stuff. But if it's one in a million chances that's going to happen, would you do that? If you're not going to buy insurance for your house for a fire, and that has a higher probability of happening than somebody breaking into your house or breaking into your accounts and all kinds of stuff, then why are you doing it here and not doing it here?
Right.
So you have to really kind of compare apples with apples, oranges to oranges, and then assess your risk level. And is it consistent?
A guy wire is a tensioned cable that is designed to enhance the stability of a freestanding structure. Think of me as your guy wire. In terms of life skills mentoring, you're perfectly capable of standing stably on your own two feet. But I'm a cable that can enhance your stability. I'm available for individual or couples counseling, life skills mentorship, child loss grief support, LGBTQ+ support. I can also officiate weddings, end-of-life ceremonies, baby namings, invocations, or whatever guidance you may need. I serve all genders, all ages. Sessions are affordable, discreet, private, and conducted online. Find me at guy-wire.org. Book your appointment today. Well, and I think risk assessment is a universal life skill. Yeah. It's something that, and you can be, I mean, my risk assessment is mostly instinctive and intuitive. I can look around me and gauge my life, my circle, my bubble that I live in. And I can gauge pretty quickly what the risks are to me in body, mind, data, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to hide. So all those hackers out there, you're welcome to come and dig through my stuff. I have no money in the bank, but it's, I think that's something that isn't talked about enough in terms of foundational education in life skills is where do you fall in terms of your own sense of risk? I don't call it security because actually one of my favorite quotes of all time was by Helen Keller. Are you familiar with Helen Keller?
Yeah, I heard that name.
Yeah, she was born without any disabilities, but then had an illness in her early childhood, like when she was one or two, and she became deaf and blind, and because of that couldn't speak either. And this was in the 1800s, and nobody had the skills to teach her or to guide her. And they found a brilliant teacher for her, who was also partially blind and was able to tap into the soul of this little girl and guide her out of her darkness in a way. And she became a public speaker, an author, really worth looking into, Helen Keller. But she said, of all people, she said, security is mostly a myth. It does not exist in nature, nor do the children of men as a whole experience it. Avoiding danger is no less of a risk than outright exposure. Life is a grand adventure or nothing. I love that quote. Mm-hmm. And it has guided me since my adolescence when I first read it. It was burned into my brain because that's how I live my life today. It's not that I'm not smart about risk assessment. I am. But I've also honed my instincts. And that does require education. That does require skill building from people who know what they're talking about, right? So you're right. You got to reach out and find those masters out there. It's what this podcast is about, is bringing yourself and others like you into this circle, into the conversation. We have listeners in 30 countries around the world, more than 30 countries. And we are all dealing with the same basic challenges in life. I always like to wrap up our conversations by asking my guest hosts for three tools from your kit. It could be something that we have discussed already that you want to reiterate, or it could be something that we haven't touched on. Three tools that could be tried out universally by anybody listening to say, maybe I can synthesize that with my tools that I already have. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind is, it kind of relates to what I was talking about before, being able to think fast on your feet, being able to adjust and adapt. And one way to do that is to absorb as much information as you can and be able to access that information as much as fast as you can. So one thing that I've been doing for a few years now is training my brain to work faster. And how does one do that? Well, I love listening to podcasts. I love reading books and biographies and all that kind of stuff, but you only have so much time in your day. Right. For myself, I'm a very slow reader. I was a slow reader to begin with, and it takes me hours and days and days to finish a book. And so if I was to read a 250-page book, it might take me, let's say 20, 24 hours, right? Over a course of a couple months, right? Of starting on and starting again and all kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden audiobooks came up. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. So I would have the book in front of me. So I'm reading it at the same time as I'm listening to it. And that hits me in both senses and allows me to retain the information better. But listening to it already takes me half the time than me actually reading myself. So that's 9 hours. So I'm already saving time there. Right. And then all of a sudden I discovered the playback speed button. I'm like, hey, this looks cool. So then I went to 1.25, 1.52, and then all of a sudden I'm finishing books in three, four hours of a 250-page book. And because I'm watching reading the book at the same time, my reading speed goes faster too as I'm listening. So then I go, well, what's stopping me from doing this on my YouTube videos and my podcast? So I'm now listening to stuff at 1.5, 2.5 times the speed. And eventually you start realizing, hey, when I go out into the real world, I can access information faster because I've been training my brain to receive information faster. Now people go, wow, 2 times the speed, that's way too fast. Well, this is what my recommendation is. Start at 2 times the speed for like 5-10 seconds, and then reduce it down to 1.5. All of a sudden you're like, hey, this is listenable. Right. And then you already are increasing your processing time by 50%. So that's one thing I highly recommend.
Very good.
The other thing is, again, something that we've been talking about a lot is surrounding yourself with those people, those mentors, those guides who can help you along your path. There's nothing out there that hasn't been done before. There's nothing out there that people have not already succeeded in. So you're not alone. You just need to find those people who's already done it and willing to share their successes, their failures. Don't ask the people who have no experience. I had one client come up to me and goes, so do you buy Bitcoin and cryptocurrency? I'm like, I do some. And he goes, I don't get why anybody would do that. It doesn't work. I tried it out a little bit. It doesn't work. I'm like, who did you ask? Well, I asked a friend of mine. I'm like, are they successful in it? He's like, no. Well, there you go. Why don't you ask someone who's doing well in it before you jump into it? What do you expect to happen, right? So seek those people out. Another story on that is when I had an issue writing my first book, my coach goes, what's your problem? I'm like, well, who's going to read my book? Why would somebody read my book? That person over there already wrote this book. Why am I writing it? And he gave me a line that rings true to me every single day. And that is, over the last 100 years, nothing new has been written, but your voice hasn't been heard. Now, I may or may not be able to reach your audience. So therefore, every single moment that you don't write your book and pass that message on, you're depriving those followers, your clients, your friends from that message. I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense because I can't expect to reach everybody. And therefore, everybody else can't expect to reach everybody or please everybody.
Right.
Everybody has a voice. So reach out to those people who can help you get to where you want to be. And I think those are the two biggest things that helped me get to where I am today. And two of the biggest things that I pass on to my clients so that they could succeed in what they're doing. And it's something that we can all do every single day, something we could do right away. And it's just a matter of reaching out, just imagining a measure of just starting reading or listening to more stuff so that we could pack our brains with more things.
Balance, pain mitigation, range of motion, athletic performance, focus, memory, immune system support, and REM level of sleep, all this and more made possible affordably with no pharmaceuticals, no injections, or invasive treatments. Just socks, insoles, and patches made stronger with the tactile patterning of Vox Life products. Scientifically proven to work and guaranteed. Now in the USA, Canada, and the UK. Visit www.dianedinkmeyer.voxlife.com. That's Vox, VOXX, Life. You'll be glad you did. Pack our brains with more things. That sounds very daunting to me. I want to do the opposite. I feel like I want to empty my brain because there's so much information out there, that it does. For me, it becomes overwhelming. I'm really glad that I live where I live. I'm in a very remote, very tiny village out in the middle of a rural environment, and the closest city is 40 minutes away. And there's something at this stage of my life where I want to slow things down because I feel like, as you say, the world is speeding up to two times or more the speed, and how do we find the balance? How do we find the balance between information overload? Because I feel like, especially, and this is the last thing I want to touch on before I let you go, especially with young folks, I feel like we are providing them with more tools to absorb information at faster speeds and in greater volumes than we ever have in history. And I think intellectually, as humans, we're able to wrap our minds around all that information. That's proving to be true. You know, add video games in there and they're showing that that actually improves your skill level. Even hand-eye coordination. But the thing that's missing for me is that I don't know that emotionally we can wrap our hearts around the volume of information that's being made accessible to us, and to be able to sort it out for our own hearts. You know, what do I resonate with? What is truth? That's a big one in our time.
Yeah.
Right. What can you offer in terms of advice to our listeners about, yes, filling our minds with as much information as possible, but also being able to hold our hearts in that at the same time?
Yeah. So when I say fill our minds with as much things as we can, it goes back to the whole risk assessment stuff, right? The more things that you can relate to, the more things that you can kind of dwell on or pick out, is the more ability that you have to assess what kind of risks and what kind of expectations you have. Going back to your current question, well, the thing is, it comes down to that one-on-one connection with people, having conversations. You may have all this information in your mind, but you may or may not know what that actually means to you. And that's something that you were talking about. Yep. And therefore, when you're having conversations with other people, whether it's in agreement or you're disagreeing with that person, at least you know where you're standing instead of just spouting out information that you've downloaded into your brain. Because once you start talking about it, you start realizing, wait a minute, this person has a good point. Maybe what I'm saying is completely just somebody else telling me what to say, and I'm regurgitating it. So having those open conversations without having that sense of defending what you're trying to say, but having that open conversation to understand, to connect, to understand what it means to you and what it means to other people. And the more conversations you have with other people, not only on the information that you know, but also on experiences, on feelings, on emotions, and all that kind of stuff, allows you to really connect to people on a heart-to-heart level. Because if you don't do that, then yeah, we're just all balls of information walking around. But having those conversations, having those heart-to-heart conversations, allows you to understand who you are, where you're coming from, and how you are integrated in that community with other people who have the same thing, who also have different perspectives, who have different backgrounds, different information, different feelings.
That's so important. Thank you for that. I think that's why we're experiencing such a boom in podcasts, because we are craving that heart-to-heart communication between human beings. We're craving that relief from the divisions that information will cause, the rifts that cause, and it all boils down to fear. Yep. Fear breeds ignorance. Ignorance breeds hate. Hate breeds violence, and it's a never-ending cycle. And so if we can start having conversations without judgment, without defensiveness, and just say, this is my perspective, maybe I'm wrong. Right? That should be on a t-shirt.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, right? But thank you for being a guest host on this podcast. Awesome. I'm really excited to maintain our connection and keep these conversations going. Thanks for all that you do in the world. You are a helper, and you are coming from your heart. And we need more people like you in this world, Fong.
Well, awesome. Thank you very much. And you do amazing things as well. And I'm very glad I connected with you. And after this, our second in-depth conversation, I've learned a lot. We may not agree on everything, but we agree on a lot of things, and right. I've learned a lot, and thank you for the opportunity of being within your circle. So thank you.
Common ground exists. We just have to look for it. We just have to seek it out. Take care. We'll talk again soon.
Awesome.
You've been listening to Season 3 of the Lost Traveler Podcast with your host, Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at www.henryallen.org. Thank you to all my guests, and thank you to my listeners all around the world. I couldn't do this without your support. Let's keep striving for a better world together.